respect to this one.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to call the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee meeting to order.
It's a really short term.
With that, Representative Pugh, would you make a motion on the minutes from yesterday's meeting, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes for Tuesday, March 22nd.
Members, any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes from March 22nd, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are adopted. All right. We have several bills on the agenda today, so we're going to try and do the best that we can to stick to the jurisdiction that we have for each of the bills in front of us. The first bill on the agenda is House File 3209. Where is this going? Chairman Hackbarth. Mr. Chair, I have here that this should just be going to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's correct.
With that, I'll move House File 3209 to be referred to the General Register. And with that, Mr. Chairman, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is an issue that has been around the legislature before about banning lead in certain circumstances. The DNR usually brings forward a bill for the legislature to look at, and it's been done in the past and has not passed the legislature. Now the DNR is trying to do it through a rule, and I'm sure they're going to come forward and have a few things to say about the bill. There'll be a couple other people that want to testify to the bill, but I don't think there's any science behind this bill or behind the change that they want to make in banning lead shot, and we're trying to stop what they're trying to do, and they should bring a bill to the legislature for their approval. And that's why I have this bill here today, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, we have several folks on the agenda that are wishing to testify. Let's see here. I have Jessica Vandenberg. And to all the testifiers, again, the jurisdiction of this committee is whether or not rulemaking should be going forward. So our jurisdiction, our concerns are about rulemaking and adopting rules in this committee. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. If you would just introduce yourself for the record, then you can proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Sanders. My name is Jessica Vandenberg, and I'm on the board of the Minnesota chapter of Safari Club International, and I'm a volunteer board member. I'm also a constituent of Representative Seltzer, and I'm here to testify on behalf of Minnesota's SCI in support of House File 3209. The issue with this rule, it isn't about whether lead shot is toxic or the science behind that. The issue is that the proposed DNR rule is based on incidence of mortality instead of scientific evidence of a population level impact. And we're basically here today just to state our support for it and to say that we do believe this should be handled through the legislature and should not be an issue that's dealt with through rulemaking with the DNR. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I have Mr. Don Arnasty. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. If you would introduce yourself, please, for the record, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Arnasty. I represent the Isaac Walton League. There is a letter in your packet from our past national president, who's a local Isaac Walton League member, Dave Zentner, that reflects the views in a more comprehensive manner on this bill of our membership. To address the committee's jurisdiction specifically, I'm here to say that we oppose this bill and we support the use of rule as DNR is doing. We believe they're taking a very thoughtful and careful approach to this rulemaking and believe that it should proceed and this piece of legislation should not. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnasty. Next on the agenda, I have Mr. Andrew Rothman. Good morning, sir. If you would introduce yourself for the record and proceed with testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Rothman. I'm the president of Gun Owners Civil Rights Alliance. The fix is in on this bill. And the fix has been in on this bill from the DNR for more than a decade. I was looking at the non-toxic shot advisory committee report from 2006. So this is 10 years this has been in the DNR sites. And the conclusions from this report from 10 years ago says there's insufficient data to clearly determine which wildlife species are being impacted. Finding the smoking gun would be extremely expensive and perhaps not even feasible. Even with this evidence, it's difficult to estimate what the overall population effects would be. So these are the best minds from the DNR from 10 years ago. Speaking of smoking guns, their report says in 2006, it is inevitable that lead shot will have to be restricted for all shotgun hunting at some future time. 10 years ago, the DNR said, yeah, we don't have the science, but we're going to ban lead anyway. This has been the plan all along. The science isn't there, but the fix is there. This bill should move forward, and if any decision is to be made, it should be made by the legislative body and not by rulemaking.
Thank you, Mr. Rothman. Next on the list, I have the DNR. So I don't know exactly who from the DNR, Mr. Meyer or others. Come on down. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. My name is Paul Thielander. I'm the Wildlife Section Chief for Minnesota DNR. And thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today. On October 12, 2015, DNR provided notice of a public notice of a possible rulemaking that would require non-toxic shot for small game hunting on WMAs in the farmland zone of Minnesota. Our proposal would apply only to WMAs in the farmland zone. This would be a total of 400,000 acres and about 1.5% of the total land base in the zone. And this rule would make them consistent with regulations on WPAs or waterfowl production areas. There'd be no private land included. I received many comments during the notice period. We had 2220 in support and 1520 opposed. We also had a public meeting on March 10th of this year with about 90 attendants in support, and the opposition was roughly equal at that meeting. DNR's next step in that process would be to publish a notice of intent to adopt a rule, which has its own comment period and a hearing process. We oppose HF 3209 because we believe a non-toxic shot requirement in the farmland zone is needed for a number of reasons. There are many scientific articles outlining the incidence of lead poisoning in wildlife caused by ingestion of lead shot. Spent lead shot does kill wildlife. It lowers reproductive rates, makes them more vulnerable to predation, and effects can vary from acute or lethal to chronic or sublethal effects. 8.9% of waterfowl had lead shot ingestion in a study conducted from 73 to 84, and other studies have shown ingestion rates in game birds ranging from 1.8 to 2.9%. The WMAs in the farmland zone have a high concentration of wetlands and receive high hunting pressure compared to surrounding private lands. Even though non-toxic shot has been required for waterfowl hunting in Minnesota since 1987 and nationwide since 1999, Minnesota mallard sample in 1997, 10 years after the non-toxic shot was required to hunt waterfowl in Minnesota, had an 11% shot ingestion rate, and a third of those had shot that contained lead, including indicating continued lead shot deposition. So DNR is concerned about lead shot deposition of wetlands by small game hunters. We believe that good land stewardship means managing WMAs for healthy wildlife populations long term, and lead alternatives readily exist and would limit the deposition of a known toxic that persists in the environment for decades. There's also some additional information here on ammunition pricing, and then there's a map on the back that shows the DNR farmland zone, and again, this would just apply to WMAs in that zone. Be about 400,000 acres and about 1.5% of that zone. Mm-hmm. And that completes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Thielander. That is all that I have on the agenda from individuals that have asked to speak on this bill. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move on to member questions and discussion of the bill. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in your packet, there's an amendment that I have. And it's a little tongue-in-cheek because we can't give our rulemaking authority to the NRA. But I guess the question I have for Representative Hackbarth is, why are we restricting here, and he has a later bill that that puts it someplace else, and I have to say, I'm a hunter, and I hunt not as much of birds as I used to, and so, but I understand a little bit where he's coming from on this, but why are we restricting on this issue, when this issue alone, the rule? I know that we have the ability as a legislature, if a rule comes out that we can, the next legislative session, overturn that rule, so why are we taking a preemptive approach to this?
Representative Nelson, are you offering your tongue-in-cheek amendment?
Or? I'm not going to offer the amendment.
Okay.
It's there for discussion purposes.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Nelson, the bill is here because the DNR has proposed this, like you heard testimony, was it in October 2015? October 2015, and we've seen that was coming. This has normally gone through the legislative process. That's why we're here before this committee today, is because we knew it was coming, the proposed rule. We weren't sure exactly when it was going to be adopted. It was going through the process. The legislative session is here now. I think the DNR wanted us to address it or have the opportunity to address that. At least that's what was said in a meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago. So that's why the bill is here. We're going to address the issue now, and we had that in on my committee last week, and now it's here in rules, and I think it's the proper way and the proper time to do it, because once we're out of session, the DNR is going to adopt this rule, and then it's going to be law. So it's here now to try to preempt it, and I think that's the right thing to do, and we're talking about it, we're addressing it. I wish that the DNR would have brought a bill forward to let the legislature address it, but they didn't do that. They chose to do it by rule because they've lost in the past on this issue.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I heard testimony earlier from somebody that supports your bill, and I've got an email from someone that's telling me to vote for the bill. And we talk about science, and we had a lot of long discussion last year on the floor about science and how we in the legislature have very few scientists among us. I guess the email that I got, I'm going to quote here, says, proper wildlife conservation requires a fact-based approach. Rule changes like this should be based on solid scientific evidence, and facts from the lead ammunition must be completely understood. And I guess I agree with everything that's being said in that statement, but what scientific evidence are you bringing forward? Have you got that the DNR may not be right in what they're trying to do? And I got this. I'd like to know, because I do like to make decisions based on facts. And I guess where is your scientific evidence and facts that you brought this forward, to bring this bill forward?
Well, thankfully, we're not a science committee, but Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Nelson. That is exactly the problem. I don't have any science, and neither does the DNR. That's the point. They don't have any science to back it up.
Representative Nelson.
I don't know what to say to that. I'd like to see the facts from either side on this. Like I said, I know when I was an avid duck hunter at the time that they banned and they went to steel shot. And I don't know if this is the right way to go about it either. So with that, I'll...
Well, thank you, Representative Nelson. I think that highlights the point that this probably should be a discussion for the legislature. Any other member discussion questions to this bill? Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a point of information, maybe the DNR gentleman can help. The WMA, is that a federal designation? The WMAs, they determine the boundaries of those, or is this just Minnesota's definition?
Mr. Thielander.
Mr. Chair, Representative. WMA is Wildlife Management Area. That is a state public land management unit. So the state identifies the boundaries, does the acquisition, and puts in place rules on those lands. Those are state-owned lands. WPAs, which I referenced earlier, are wildlife production areas. Those are federal land managed units. And those already have this non-toxic shot requirement for small game hunting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mr.
Representative Brumbeck.
Follow-up. States generally then are creating WMAs? Or is this, again, unique to Minnesota?
Sure. Mr. Thielander.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are other states, too, that have wildlife management areas. The states of South Dakota, has a system of WMAs that they manage too, and they implemented this rule back in 1989, I believe. And the state of Iowa has WMAs as well, and they implemented this rule in 16 of their WMAs, and then in certain locations in 7 other WMAs in that state.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other member questions or discussion? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the record, I want to be really clear that I have heard from and reached out directly to some really active and avid hunters in my district, folks who are active volunteers in the community and are really active in the hunting community and proudly so. And they have really enthusiastically endorsed the DNR making this rulemaking change because of the wildlife management and because of natural resource management. And I was frankly surprised to hear it so loud and clear. That was not the answer I was expecting when I proactively went out and sought this. And so that council was extremely important to me that I heard from my constituents. So I just wanted to let you know what I'm hearing from the hunting community in my district.
Any other final member questions or discussion? Seeing none, Chair Hackbarth will give you the final words.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I'd like to just add that Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance, which is a group of almost every hunting and fishing organization in the state of Minnesota, I think all but one member of that organization supports this legislation.
Thank you. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 3209 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You can stay right there, Chair Hackbarth, and we will move on to House File 2843. And this similarly has gone through the process and should be on its way to the General Register. So I'll make a motion that House File 2843 be referred to the General Register. To you, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Consequently, this is a bill that is coming from the DNR, and I do support the legislation, and the DNR will be on my side on this one.
Funny.
This is an issue that we need to get done because of some fishing regulations that need to take place to address small hammer-handled northern pike, which are in many of our lakes, and it's quite a problem, and this needs to be done, and I think this is the best approach to do it. So it's through rulemaking, and I do support the legislature. And I don't know if you have any testifiers to the bill, but I think maybe the DNR might want to say a word.
Sure, we don't have anyone that's requested testimony on this, but is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill for the rulemaking? Mr. Meyer, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR. Thank you, Representative Hackbarth, for working with us on this bill. This is important for us to help get the northern pike population back in check. The reason it's in front of your committee is the expedited rulemaking process that we would use to implement the changes within the bill that we use to establish all seasons and hunting zones and fishing regulations. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Members, any questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, as I pointed out in my earlier testimony, a little bit of irony here. In one bill, the chairman taketh away the rulemaking ability, and this one he's giving them the rulemaking ability. So I just think it's a little bit ironic that they're back-to-back.
This is a beautiful place, Representative Nelson. Any other member questions or discussion? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. Is there a cost to this? Or is it just all just...
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, the fiscal impact is there is very minimal, if any, fiscal impact to this proposal.
Good.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, as an avid northern chaser fisherman, thank you for this bill.
It's my favorite fish to fish and eat.
Any final member questions or discussion to this bill? Seeing none, Chair Hackbarth, you can have the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
With that, members, I will renew my motion that House File 2843 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Chair Hackbarth. Thank you, members.
Representative Hoppe, welcome to Government Operations.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
You know, in many committees that I am on with Representative Hoppe, he always asks the question, have we killed a bill yet this session? And so I'd like to ask that question.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Hoppe.
This would be a good one to kill because it covers legislative pay in the Andover area.
Duly noted. With that, I will make a motion that House File 1520 be referred to the General Register. Representative Hoppe, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I am going to speak very briefly because I've got a cold and I'm feeling sorry for myself. This is the LCC bill, and I have Mr. Hubinger here to explain exactly why we're here and what we're doing, and I will let him get to it.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. 1520 is the LCC housekeeping bill. I believe there's an A1 amendment to get the bill in order.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I was supposed to bring that up, and I forgot.
It's okay. With that, we have the A1, which is an author's amendment. I will move the A1. Is there any discussion before we put the bill in the shape the author wishes? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, I thought I'd just briefly walk through the amendment and then the rest of the bill. Amendment first deleted a number of retirement provisions that applied to legislative staff that was dealt with during the 2015 session and is no longer needed. There are also a number of provisions that relate to the state ethnic councils that were restructured by the legislature during the 2015 session. But the proposed changes are housekeeping or clarifying only. They refer to how the reporting relationships work between the council directors and the LCC, how the council staff report to their directors, and then how the councils deal with proposing their biennial budgets through the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget. That is the substance of the language of the amendment. The rest of the bill relates to professional technical contracts, sections 1 through 3. These provisions are parallel to changes that the legislature adopted for executive branch agencies back in 2013. They reflect the kinds of common practices that are in place now. Section 4 is a controversial piece that provides for the chair of the LCC to rotate every 2 years instead of every year between the Senate President and the House Speaker. It is not a serious provision. And then Section 5 requires that reports to the legislature, to the LCC for the legacy website, be provided electronically. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Members, any questions? Representative Lane.
I would just like to say that the part that fine-tunes the work I did last year on the ethnic councils is great. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other questions to the bill? I will say, Chair Hoppe, it does trouble me to see that we're going to actually give the Senate another year of power in this bill. That's a serious concern. I'll have to think about it.
I stand properly chastised, Mr. Chair.
Any other member questions, comments? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, over here.
Representative Nash.
I didn't see the part that dealt with the Andover pay. Was that an A2 amendment?
That was stricken in the A1 amendment.
With that, members, I will renew my motion that House File 1520 be referred to the General Register as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is Representative Swedzinski. Welcome to the committee, Representative Swedzinski. I will make a motion that House File 1769 be referred to the General Register. To your bill, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Sanders. House File 1769 gives clarity to business so they can better be informed and prepared for issues that affect them. This bill simply outlines the parameters of notification from local units of government to small business when there are proposed changes to the environment in which they operate. I have a few folks, Kevin Toma being one of them, that I don't believe is in the room yet, to testify on behalf of the bill. We can move forward. I believe there is an amendment within the packet. I don't know if we could have a member move that so that we can get the bill in the form.
Sure. I will go ahead and move the A16 dash a bunch of numbers, which is an author's amendment. Any discussion to the author's amendment to put the bill in the shape the author wishes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr.
Did that
Chair.
Give you enough time to get your testifier down here?
We've got, I just texted them just to double check, but we can kind of go through the portions of the bill, especially the parts where the amendment made some changes. So if you go into page one of the bill, which is a single page bill, go to line 14, we change the kind of the some of the dates and times, move it from 15 to 14. The primary reason behind that change is to address some of the concerns just from a meeting time and from a biweekly basis in which a lot of the local units of government meet, that it better fits with some of those scheduling issues. And then also in discussions with primary parties, petroleum retailers and retailers associations, dealing with just the commonality and the preference for receiving some of these notices by email, which seems to be more of the norm now than actually using first-class mail. That's the changes that we made to the bill. I'm sure there are some other folks that would like to comment on the bill, potentially from the League of Cities coalition or counties, that they may want to come on up.
Oh, here's that one.
So there we go. So
thank you, Representative Swedzinski. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author of the bill. On line 1.16 of your bill as amended, there's a bit of a nebulous phrase that I would appreciate if you could expand on just for better definition. It says notify potentially affected businesses. Could you expound in terms of how a municipality would define potentially affected businesses?
Well, I think
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Albright. You know, I believe that is part of the interpretation of, you know, some of the licenses are directly related to specific products, but also some of the notifications and changes may or may not be related to maybe restaurants or something as a whole. And so, if it would be foam cups, the unit of government may or may not know whether or not foam cups are used within that business because it's not necessarily outlined part of the license. So the local unit of government may not know whether or not, but they may have a good idea that, hey, they serve things in cups. So that would be part of the nebulous of that being involved.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So Representative Swedzinski, just as an example, I understand that there is an ordinance pending in, I believe it's Minneapolis, for the suppression of using plastic bags. When we consider Hennepin County, in this case, notification by first class mail, is that, how would that work operationally if everyone would have to receive a letter by first class mail?
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sanders.
No, I'm Albright.
What did I call you?
Well, he's just saying I'm the chair.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Oh, that's all. Oh. Go ahead.
Yeah. There is a resemblance, though.
Representative Albright, if you look at the A160918 amendment that we just added to the bill, that expanded the potential use of modes of contact to expand it to email as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sanders.
Representative Swedzinski, would you like to move on to your testifier?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I have Kevin Toma with the Petroleum Retailers Association here to talk about the bill and and its effect on businesses that he represents. Thank
Welcome
you.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Sanders and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Toma, and I work for the members of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. We're a trade association that represents over 800 members. I'm here today to support House File number 1769. We believe that Minnesotans operating businesses should be able to participate in the government process. This bill will help small businesses do just that. Occasionally, local units of government consider local ordinances, and business owners are not aware that the process is occurring. House File 1769 helps address this issue by requiring local units of government to notify businesses whose licenses may be affected by the proposed ordinance. The subject of the ordinance should not matter, whether it's hours of service or hours of operation, product containers such as polystyrene cups or plastic bags, or legal products sold in Minnesota such as tobacco or sugary snacks. Example of how an ordinance might affect a license would go something like this. Imagine that a local unit of government is going to consider an ordinance to pass regarding sugary snacks, and that you can't sell those sugary snacks within 500 feet of a school. If you're the mom and pop who's operating a convenience store kitty corner from that school, that's going to adversely affect your license and ultimately your bottom line. And we feel that those folks should have the right to participate in the process. So we're just asking that our folks are given notification and that they're allowed to participate in the process. Because occasionally, if you're a small business owner and you're not attending council meetings or going to county board meetings, you may not know that the process has already started. So we're just asking that folks be given notice so that they know when the process starts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Toma. Any member questions or discussion? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And similar to the question Representative Albright asked, as I read that line about potentially affected businesses, I think of just about every ordinance that they're going to do, they're going to have to, because they don't know what all the businesses may be selling. Say a gym that sells has a pop machine and sells pop there, and they do a potential amendment about sugary drinks and whatever. If they don't get a notice, it could come up. So I think the county or the city is going to have to blanket every business that's in their jurisdiction if they're going to consider such change. I think there's going to be a large cost to our local governments. Again, this would be a mandate passed down to them, that unfunded mandate that we're handing to them to have to make more notifications. So I don't know. I have some concerns about that. It's overly broad there. I guess there's no other question there, but I'd like to ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have more of a comment here. I like the fact that we're kind of moving away from just having notices like that and published in a local newspaper. I just have thought for years that we need to change, you know, the public notice laws that restrict it to, you know, even foreclosures and different things being posted in a local newspaper. Because so few people subscribe to those. I know when I first ran for office, I checked the newspaper that's out of Anoka because Andover doesn't have a newspaper. And I found, was running to represent Andover and Ham Lake. Well, the combined subscribers in those two cities for that particular newspaper, which was the only one around, was 1,000 people. And 1,000 households. So I just think the newspapers is, you know, we're going to have a broader discussion on this, and I think it has been had sort of over the years, but it's just much more effective for these local units of government to post something on their website or to send something like this out electronically, especially if it can be done. So that was just my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the, are we going to hear from the League of Cities, or I just, because my question kind of is to local government policy, so if we're not going to hear from them, I can ask my question, or I can wait.
They're in the room, but they have not requested.
Well, I can ask my...
Hold on one second. I mean, they are in the room, so...
Mr. Chair, I can ask my question, and if they want to respond, perhaps?
Sure.
Okay. So, one of the things that gives me pause with this is the kind of the broad net with which cities and local governments are being asked to cast, essentially guessing about who might be affected by potential ordinances, and if something is missed, or if an email goes into a junk folder, which goodness knows happens to me a lot, where I think I'm supposed to have something and I don't, could local governments end up being liable in some way? Could they get sued? And that's a big expense to our local governments, especially small towns, and that feels really concerning to me.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Yeah, we have several of you guys. Why don't you guys just all kind of come down? And you can respond first to the question.
Morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. And I apologize, I did give you late notice today that we were intending to at least talk about the bill. And I, if you don't mind, I would first like to also thank Representative Swazinski, because he had a coalition of cities and counties meet with him yesterday afternoon. He was very hospitable, and we kind of talked about our initial concerns about this bill. I think representatives in this room hit on two very good points, kind of the vagueness and uncertainty surrounding the potentially affected businesses. The amendment, we very much appreciate the email form. One of our larger concerns at first was just the cost to taxpayers of actually notifying of all potential impacted businesses. First, we would have to kind of create a list, and how do you create that list on something as vague as potentially impacted? For larger counties, that would create a lot of staff time. And secondly, it would be first-class mailings. That could be tens of thousands of dollars if we're talking about something as large as plastic bag ordinance in the city of Minneapolis. We do also appreciate the time switch in the amendment from 15 to 14 days. But as Representative Scott actually mentioned, another solution might be also just posting on our website. When I did a quick survey of counties, Redwood County, some of our larger counties, St. Louis County, folks said that they're already doing this, that they're already notifying. If they know a business might be impacted, their commissioners are notifying those businesses, and they're posting their agenda and materials on their websites. So the last thing I would offer, and I offered this yesterday too to Representative Swazinski, is if there are particular situations in either cities or counties where this is happening, I know at least from the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota Inter-County Association, Keith Carlson wasn't here to testify, but we are more than open to sitting down and making sure that those issues are remedied and that there's clear communication.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgart. Go ahead, sir.
Member Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Grundhofer on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities. And the only comments I would echo those of Mr. Hilgart, and with all due respect, Mr. Representative, our major concern with this bill is really not knowing what our obligations are under the bill. The definition of when and how and the businesses we're supposed to notify is frankly fairly vague and uncertain. If we were going to kind of make sure we comply with all our obligations, we'd probably send notices out to every single business in the community, because the definition of what's a potentially affected business is so unclear. I read this bill several times yesterday, and until I had it explained to me off record, I did not really know at all what it was meant to deal with. I now know what it's meant to deal with, but I think the scope of the notification requirement is very, very broad and concerning to us. So that would be our major concern.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else that wishes to testify, come on down.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brian Carr. I'm the Director of Government Relations and Legal Counsel for the Minnesota Retailers Association. Representation members represent about 1,200 storefronts across the state, we impact about 780,000 jobs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 1769. Thank you, Representative Swazinski, for bringing this, Chair Sanders, and also Representative Nash being on the bill. You know, we support the concept of an adequate and objective notification for initial hearings to only licensed businesses that could be affected, not everyone, to only licensed businesses that can be affected, on a potential ordinance that Mr. Toma outlined could be, you know, change a bottom line for a business. You know, we find that a lot of the cities and a lot of the counties are doing a really good job, and not to impugn any particular one, but some of them just aren't adequately notifying our members and different association businesses. They're having a really hard time getting to these hearings, some of which are the day of or the night before. So when stakes are so high, we really feel that it's a good concept to be able to adequately notify those businesses about these potential ordinances and even the initial hearings, because those conversations and that discussion which is happening at those initial hearings potentially impact a hearing for enactment of that ordinance or whatnot. So again, you know, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify. I just wanted to touch on a question I believe Representative Nelson asked regarding, you know, how do we get to all the businesses? How do we get to every single business? I think that's a great question. What we found with our members and in the business community in general is once word gets out to enough businesses, they talk to each other and they let the other businesses know, especially those that would be affected. So, you know, I don't think that the nature of the bill and the concept is trying to get to every single business, but right now they're not doing anything until possibly the day of. And that's what we're trying to fix, and that's what we're just trying to get a little more leeway up.
Thank you, Mr. Carr. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the point I was trying to make with that question, and it's still the cities and the counties brought this up also, is the cost of this. If they're going to put a notice out, they don't know all the businesses that may potentially be are affected by it, so they're going to have to notify all the businesses. And if they don't notify all the businesses and you have one little, you know, like I said, a gym someplace that may be selling pop out of a pop machine and they don't get notified, it could blow the whole thing up. So I think it's kind of vague and broad in that matter. I know they talk, but the idea of only posting it on a website is troublesome also, because that means that the businesses would proactively have to look at every time they change the website, constantly look at the city's website to have to come up with, well, what are they going to change? And I don't think most businesses want to have to do that. And I think most businesses are busy enough doing their jobs and trying to create jobs. And so I think that part, if we went that way, that would be even more onerous than what's going on now.
Okay. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Sanders. And I have maybe three questions. I don't know if you want to take them one at a time or who could answer them. But I, too, am concerned about the vagueness of the potentially affected businesses. And I know you're trying to narrow it a little bit by saying licensed businesses. But if an ordinance is affecting a licensed business one way, and you have another business that you're licensing in another way, but it also affects them for this one, there's that confusion. So let's say a city licenses a massage parlor or a tanning salon, and the ordinance that you're talking about is selling pop. We keep talking about that. It could be whatever other good. And so you just notify the businesses that you know are selling pop that are licensed, or ones you would assume would be selling pop. But the city also licenses a tanning salon that's also selling pop to its customers. So they would have a case to say, I'm a licensed business by you. I might be licensed for a tanning salon, but I'm also selling pop, but you didn't notify me. So a little concerned about the broadness of it in that aspect. Another thing, I want to thank you so much for looking at the cost when you added or emailing, because that can be very costly for first class mail. But there's also a huge staff cost to getting to all these businesses. And I just use an example about 5 years ago now, our mayor wanted to have a business forum, which was a great idea, and it ended up being very well attended, but it took our city staff months to put together a list of all the businesses in town, and we're 2 by 2 miles in Hopkins. And it was down to, there's a big tech center that had 20 individual, like, consult little businesses in there, none of them licensed through us that we didn't know about. So I worry about the staff time of putting this together, and especially in small rural towns. And then, so just that's something to think about. And then I was wondering, and maybe, I don't know if it's staff that could, or council that could help me with this, because it might be linked in the statute somewhere else and just not on this bill. What happens if a city does not comply to this? Does anybody know?
Ms. Dyson, do you have any comments on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim, I may want to request some assistance on that question, but I think if they don't follow it, there's the potential for a legal challenge, and that alone is a problem for cities when they have to deal with litigation. But I was also making notes to myself about in the challenge whether it matters if the person challenging it has actual notice versus, procedural. Oh. And I realized I don't have that information, but I can certainly look into it for you about what happens when an ordinance is challenged. But that's all.
Thank you, Ms. Dyson. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Sanders. So that leads me to question. I can see where if they were actually got the physical letter versus hearing from, like what was mentioned by one of the testifiers, oh, if you notify enough businesses, the rest hear about it, would that qualify as actually being notified for it then? And since there might be legal challenges that aren't exactly written in this bill but part of the section, would this be something that civil law would need to then also hear, because you're opening up potential legal challenges? I just wasn't sure. So I don't know if... Are we sending this to the General Registry? Is this something that we should be sending to civil law?
Well, Representative Joachim, in the bill, there are no penalties in the bill. So, I mean, any penalties that would be hooked on here are already in statute. I mean, they're not adding any penalties through this bill.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's greatly expanding penalties, though, to cities. So it might be something that the civil law chair might want to look at. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swazinski, I really like the bill. I think it's a long time in coming. We had a small business that was actually, it was an annexed part of the city. It was not it was 3 miles from the closest services, and by that I mean, and I'll explain later, streetlights and sewer hookup. We had our own septic systems, we had our own water, all that, but yet, guess what? Before we even knew what happened, all of a sudden we found out that the city had passed an ordinance without any notice of hearings that we could attend, that we had to start paying, I think it was about $200 a year for stormwater, because everybody was paying it. And while $200 a year doesn't sound like much, that was the first one. So then they had an ordinance that had to do with streetlights, where everybody had to pay so much for streetlights. Well, our closest hookups and streetlights were 3 miles away, and we didn't find out about it until it was too late. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but guess what? If it keeps creeping up, that's a lot. So when we keep talking about how much it costs the city, it's like, how much does it cost the businesses who don't even get the services? So, you know, I'm looking at this as, yeah, they should notify me. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not only, especially when I don't even receive the services, explain to me why I need to pay that. So what I'm really happy to see is that, you know, yes, I think 14 days is a nice amount of time. Businesses do talk. They belong to associations. They go to meetings. They talk about these things. It's a really nice thing to do. I'm glad we added email. But what I am kind of a little concerned about, and perhaps this is something that, you know, we can add at some point to make sure that if they send an email, they also, you know, send some type of a receipt that says that the email was opened to protect everyone.
I mean, they basically want to know that that email got opened. So they'll, you know, they need to just send that, and I can't remember what that's called, but just send it to say that, yes, the email was written. You know, you send a response, but at least they know it was opened up and somebody got to see it. You know, I realize it's a cost to the cities, but guess what? It's a cost to your businesses, too. And in this day of databases and technology, everybody's got databases for something. And there's no reason you can't set up your database, put some kind of a little qualifier in it so that you can query these. I'm not necessarily saying that you need to just put those who use bags or those who do that. And maybe you do send an email out to all your businesses because sometimes it affects all of us. But, you know, it's really tiring when you get these notices in the mail. And believe me, they sure know who I am when it comes to charging me. They can find me really easy when it comes to charging me. You can let me know 14 days ahead of time that this is going on. We get a lot of these notices. We have several different properties. I mean, we get notices all the time for those. But on some of these things, it's like it's not unreasonable. When I do work, I have to give notice on different things. There's no reason the city couldn't do it. And as far as the cost, yeah, it probably is an initial cost. But guess what? You're charging me. It's going to cost me, too. And I should have an input into what happens that way as well. So I really appreciate the bill. I think we do due diligence to everyone when we let people know what's going on, especially when it's going to hit their bottom line a little bit more. But, you know, I know in this age of databases, there's a lot they do with databases and technology. And if they're not doing it, then I think that's a bigger reason why aren't you? Why don't you have a better database? And I know it costs a lot of money. I know that. I work with the city on different things as well. But I think we need to be responsible in letting people know what's going on, especially when it's going to cost them some way or another. Thank you.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems like this is a perfect bill to have the people get together and talk it out some more. It seems like it's not quite ready for prime time. We have big, huge counties. We have small counties. It relates differently to each of them. We need transparency of what's going on at the governmental level, at every level, but we also need to take some responsibility, as we often say, for the things that relate to us. So it seems like perhaps there could be an email list that somebody could opt into. The counties could set up, a small county could have just simply a email list of let me know that you want to be notified what we're going to talk about. Bigger counties could break that up into different subject areas, but the business could opt in to that email list, and then it would be their responsibility to check through it. When you talk about cost to the city or to the county, that's cost to us. It's not just some generic money being pulled out of somewhere. So we all have to pay for that if we're going to make the cities take on more cost. We just ought to be able to work out some way in which this could work well for both sides rather than just coming down. Some business had a problem perhaps somewhere and now they want this solution, but it has unintended consequences for the larger picture and it needs to be worked out.
Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Chair Sanders. Just a quick clarification, just so I understand. On the underlying law that is being amended, there already is a notice published in the newspaper at least 10 days ahead of time of the public meeting where the ordinance is going to be enacted. So there is some notification. It does take responsibility on the business end to read the paper and see it. And I know there, just I can only speak to my city's experience with doing ordinances, and there were many a times where we published stuff and had a public hearing and we were about to vote and we'd have more people come in and say, wait a minute, and we'd stop and we wouldn't pass the ordinance. We'd have another public hearing. We worked with our businesses. And I understand there may be a few cities that aren't doing that, but maybe there just needs to be a little bit more work, as Representative Lane said, because it is a lot of staff time. And databases are great, but you still need staff to put stuff in. And there is turnover a lot in the business community, at least in the metro area, in a small little 2x2 town. We found out we had 550 businesses, and a lot of them we didn't even know about because they weren't as visible. So it does take staff time, which is taxpayer dollars. So maybe, you know, you can have some further discussions, but my question is, with it going to the general registry, how does
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Chairman Sanders and
Representative Uyakim. I think I got that right. See, everyone says my last name wrong, so I try to make it a point to say other people's name right. So, no, I think, you know, Representative Lane also brought up a good point of really trying to, you know, how do we I this T and cross this I? I think, you know, as we move forward, I feel that we've got some good ideas, and talking with some of the stakeholders, I am definitely willing to work on some of this to kind of give some clarification, maybe eliminate some of that ambiguity between now and the floor. And I really appreciate your thoughts on those particular issues and maybe some ways that we can go out of our way to find that gap, realizing that we do have folks that are busy, you know, creating jobs and working on their businesses and may not necessarily always catch the notices in the newspaper. And so I think some of the concerns, too, is, you know, when those prior notices do happen, it may be that action already happened. And I think that's generally the fear of saying, hey, this ordinance has passed or this has already been agreed to upon, not necessarily this is a proposal that is going to be looked at. So, yeah.
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, in listening to the conversations, I know I started this by asking the author of the bill the definition of potentially affected businesses, and I asked that question in light of, you know, the broad breadth of that that phrase. But as I've listened to the testimony and the question line of questioning by a number of the members of this committee, it actually does make sense now. And I'll posit this with the membership, because in an age when we deal with multimedia and you deal with alerts on your smartphones and you're subscribing to county websites and to regulatory websites, they're sending out alerts automatically on behalf of rule changes, on behalf of upcoming meetings and whatnot. It certainly would not be beyond the realm of possibility that counties would send out an e-invite with an alert to an upcoming meeting that would describe or to discuss a potential regulation change that would affect a business. And to the point of potentially affected, the county wants to make sure that breadth is there, but the businesses are the ones that can determine whether or not they are affected by that regulatory change. And so they can decide the response that is needful of their business at the time that they receive that email blast or email alert. And so I think, you know, that in itself, I think to the author's desire, I think that really does make sense that we keep it not ambiguous but broadly ascribed so that the businesses themselves can decide how to respond rather than the county, you know, trying to affect a specific industry code and then run the risk of forgetting someone. And so from that standpoint, I actually now believe that it is important to keep it in the broad brush. To that sense, then, you know, the burden on the counties to report and to respond to regulatory changes and update those alerts, really, that's already baked into the responsibilities of the county from a standpoint of email alerts. I check the Scott County website probably, you know, 2-3 times a week just for updates on upcoming meetings, on alerts, and I'm getting those from Scott County as well. So I think the dialogue between the counties and their businesses, if anything, it will avail businesses to look more often, or the county to be more responsive in terms of how they send those alerts out. So thank you to Representative Swedzinski for bringing this forward, and I think in light of the conversation, this makes all the sense in the world as a good step forward for communication between counties and businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member questions or discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Swedzinski will give you the final word.
I appreciate the discussion on both sides of the aisle. You know, I appreciate the testimony that came on behalf and against with concerns on the bill, and I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. We will anticipate that you'll work with all the stakeholders between now and the floor and arrive at a product that everyone can sign off on. With that, roll calls that are requested. The assistant will take the roll.
Chair Sanders.
Aye.
Vice Chair Pugh.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Albright.
Aye.
Representative Halverson?
No.
Representative Lane?
No.
Representative Mullery? Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Runbeck?
Aye.
Representative Seltzer? Representative Tice? Representative Joaquin?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
There being 9 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. Thank you, members. With that, we've completed the agenda for today, and we will see you guys tomorrow for another full agenda. Thank you. We are adjourned.